Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Can we get serious now?
One thing that did happen during the 60s was some music of an unusual or experimental nature did get recorded and did get released. Now look at who the executives were in those companies at those times. Not hip young guys. These were cigar-chomping old guys who looked at the product that came and said, I don't know. Who knows what it is? Record it, stick it out of it, sells, all right. We were better off with those guys than we are now with the supposedly hip young executives who are making the decisions of what people should see and hear in the marketplace.
Success in the music business begins with a dream, a vision. This podcast will give you, the listener, the insight and tools to turn that vision into a reality. Meet the industry professionals who work day by day behind the scenes, helping to make those dreams come true. Welcome to the business side of music.
Hey, back in the studio today here in Nashville, Tennessee, sitting across the table from us, a gentleman, as we've started having a conversation before the show, we're finding out, as you said so eloquently, our lanes have passed. Our lanes have crossed a few times.
No doubt.
Michael Blanton's with us. I have followed this man's career for a long, long time. Native of Amarillo, Texas, got his start in music as an A&R rep for Word Records in Waco, Texas, which then moved to Nashville. You helped start the Nashville office.
I did. Open the door.
Then you and your partner, Dan Harrell, launched Blanton Harrell Management and Productions, represented one of my favorite artists, Amy Grant, I think, along with a few others.
First one.
And then you hooked up with Brown Bannister, a favorite producer of mine. See, there seems to be a consistency here.
We got to be kin some way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You guys created Reunion Records and Reunion Publishing. Had some great artists on that, including Michael W. Smith, Rich Mullins, Wayne Kirkpatrick. You served as executive producer for some of Amy Grant's biggest hits, including Unguarded, Lead Me On, the multi-platinum Heart in Motion, which sold over 10 million copies. It's hard to believe, especially for a Christian artist.
No question.
That somebody could do that well. In 1997, you and Dan Harrell served as co-presidents of Gaylord's Idea Entertainment. But I guess in 2009, that ended, and you went into a new chapter of your life. And now you're doing something that we're going to talk about a little bit here today, Songwriting University. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you very much. Glad to be here.
How did you get started in the business? Were you a musician, or did you just love music?
That's a great question. I came here with a bunch of college guys from Texas, went to work at Opryland, and thought, okay, well, this will be my stepping stone into the music world. But
were you a clogger like Stephen Curtis Chapman was?
No, unfortunately, I couldn't make the music scene. So I had to, Brown Bannister and I both were college buddies. We came out here together, and we both wound up working in the hamburger pavilion. I was cooking hamburgers, and he was cooking hot dogs.
Wow.
We did that for a summer, and we were really just kind of trying to figure out how to date cute girls and have fun at Opryland. But we thought that would be the beginning of our music career, which it was not. But that's how we got to Nashville. And then I wound up, after graduating, coming back out here and working for, there was a Christian bookstore down on Music Row called Koinonia.
Right.
So that was my first real job out of college, and I had no idea what I was doing. And really tried to make friends with a lot of different people, a lot of the music people there. There was a guy named Gary Paxton that was, you know, having quite a burst of energy as an artist. And I realized when I first got here, I was not a good enough musician to compete with the guys I was hanging with. So I really kept saying, maybe I could be in the on the business side. And then that kind of led towards, finally, I never could get a job. I said, okay, I'm going to move back to Texas. I'm going to get a real job, grow up and get, I thought I'd get into politics, oddly enough. And went to work for the Chamber of Commerce and thought, man, okay, I'm on my way. And then the next thing I know, I got a phone call from Word Records about, would you come interview for a A&R job?
And you knew nothing about A&R at that time.
Never done anything in A&R. Now, I had managed a little group out here in Nashville called Homecoming that Brown was a part of. And, you know, but it was college guys having fun. It was not career building in any way.
And then you came back to Nashville, A&R with Word Records.
Went to work for Word in the spring of 77, a week after my marriage to Paula. Went to work for Word, and for literally a year, I sat there trying to go, what am I doing here? What am I doing as an A&R guy? I mean, what kind of acts do they want to sign? And literally, I just was, you know, just trying to figure my way.
What was the roster at that point?
Yeah, there was the contemporary Christian thing had not really happened. The big roster was Southern Gospel,
right,
which was not in my wheelhouse at all. And yet I was trying to figure it out. And then there was a guy named Andrew Culverwell that's, you know, from Atlanta that I was in. There was another guy. They were mostly just kind of a middle-of-the-road type of artist that really had never had much radio hit. It had some radio success, but not much.
And then you found Dan Harrell.
Well, Dan and I had, when I was in Nashville, we had gone to the same church together. So we literally met there, and I wound up dating Amy Grant's sister, and he did too. So we were dating two of the Grant girls. Amy's the youngest of four girls, and so I'm dating one, and Dan's dating one, he went on to be a banker, and I was going to go chase the music scene. So that's how we actually met.
And then you put the management company together and signed Amy.
Yeah. In 1978, I was at Word. In 1980, we started Blanton Harrell. And he was a banker at the time. And so we said, let's form a new company. I had some fairly good success as an A&R guy already. And so we called the name company Blanton Harrell because more people in the music world knew me than they did Dan as a banker. So that's how we got started.
Alphabetically, it worked.
It worked a little bit better that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you come about realizing that Amy was going to be as big as she was going to be? Did you see it in the beginning, or is it something you had to develop?
I think it was all development. I'd love to say we were that smart that we could see it. But when she's your only client, at this point, Dan has married Amy's oldest sister. I'm no longer dating the sister, but Dan and I form a company. Amy's our first client. And we immediately, I just kind of went into artist development. You know that heartbeat. You
yeah.
just go, okay, we're here. We got to get there. Let's start.
And let's figure out what works.
Yeah. And at the time, she was playing guitar by herself, a little folk singing girl. It was I won't go into all the detail, but she was mesmerizing because of the way she talked, the way she communicated. And then she was just a cute singing folk singer, kind of a James Taylor guitar playing folk singer, and we had done a couple albums there at Word that had done okay, nothing special. But then we started. The first album we did, I said, we're going to do a live album, Amy, and we're going to change it. We're going to put it with a rock band. And there was a rock band in Memphis, a Christian band called DeGarmo and Key, Ed DeGarmo and Dana Key, who had become good friends of mine. And I had just helped produce one of their albums called This Ain't Hollywood that had been up for a Grammy nomination. So I'd worked with DeGarmo and Key, and I said, I need to put you into Amy's band and start her on another trajectory. And they said, okay, we'll do it. So they came into the picture, and we made a live album with Amy singing new songs with rock band, which is just a little too radical for the Christian market at that time. But it definitely changed her course, for sure.
She and Michael W. Smith, Smitty, got together at some point. Was he playing with her? How did that relationship develop?
I don't want to bore you with a lot of stories, but here's, you know, the thing after the DeGarmo and Key, Amy, we put out this live album, and we went to a big festival out in Colorado. You know, there's 2,500 people there, and she's debuting this new music. She starts playing the first song, and Dan and I are standing at the back as the managers. Chaz Corzine is the tour manager, and we're standing back there, and there's no applause after the first song. No applause, 2,500 people. And I'm kind of going, wow, I've never seen that before. She plays the second song and there's no applause. So now we're getting the feeling going, okay, they really do not like Amy being a rock girl. You know, she's a cute little folk singer.
Kind of like when Bob Dylan switched from acoustic to electric.
That's exactly right. Yeah. I mean, so literally people, you could feel it. People were not happy about her. And DeGarmo Key were on stage playing with her. So, and it's funny, to everybody's perspective. At this point, I looked at Dan Harrell and said, we are in big trouble. These people do not like what we're doing, and I think we need to get out of here. They're going to be mad at her, but they're going to come find us. It's going to be a bad day. So one more song, and Amy got no applause, got kind of emotional, and started telling people about, you know, really what I'm trying to do is just make music that will relate to more and more people. And Dan and I got in the car and left. We left the tour, the team, everything. Went back to the hotel and sat down and, opened a bottle of wine and said, okay, what have we totally screwed this whole plan? I mean, what are we doing? I made a decision that night that I needed to make a record that would be memorable, that would never be any question about who she was or what she was going to be. And out of that came the next record, which was Age to Age, which was El Shaddai and all this great music.
It was groundbreaking for her.
Groundbreaking. It was the first gold and platinum award for a Christian artist happened that next year after that crushing event up in Colorado.
But she slowly transitioned back into not only, I don't want to say a rock scene, it was a pop scene, but then yeah. Went secular too.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the plan was all along to, we weren't trying to just feed the Christian business. We were really trying to be, let's be really good at making music. So you're right. Later on, when the Unguarded album came out, we'd just seen, gosh, what's the Kevin Bacon?
Footloose.
And we'd said, you know what? We need to make an album. It's a lot of fun. Let's go do that. And then that got picked up on the rock, on the pop side with A&M Records, who came alongside and said, we want to put this girl out. And at the same time, it was, you know, she was having somewhat Christian success that was blowing up. But now the pop world was starting to pay attention.
Right. And then where did Smitty fit in?
Well, Smitty came in after the making of that Age Stage album. We invited him to come out and play as a session musician out at Caribou Ranch. We recorded that at Caribou. And so Smitty came out there, but he had already played for me some music as a songwriter going, I'm trying to, you know, what should we do with this? He played me Friends, his big song, that I said, you know what? I can either let Amy record this and it'll be a classic for her, or we can start your career with this song. I let him go into the studio. We spent $11,000 making that first album on him. And Jack Joseph Puig, the great engineer producer from LA, came and mixed it. And of course, that album, you know, came out right after Amy's Age to Age. And it just took off like a rocket. And next thing you know, we're putting them on the road together. And we look like we're geniuses, but we're very fortunate, very blessed men at that point.
A little serendipity there.
Yes, it was. Very much so.
We're going to take a break, get a word in for a couple of our sponsors. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about your current endeavor that you're working on, Songwriting University, and dig into that a little more.
Hi, this is Jennifer Blair with Jennifer Blair Promotions, and you are listening to The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Nashville Zoo comes to life at night with magical glowing animals, gigantic flower gardens, colossal Chinese figures, and a 200-foot-long dragon. It's Zoolumination, Chinese Festival of Lights. Meet Santa in a two-story holiday village with a towering Christmas tree and giant train. More than 500 lanterns spread across the zoo, making this the largest lantern event in the country. Come experience this 800-year-old tradition, Zoolumination, November 15th through February 2nd. Learn more at nashvillezoo.org.
Hi everyone, I'm Larry Butler, and I want to send you a free digital copy of my new book, The Singer-Songwriter Rulebook, 101 Ways to Help You Improve Your Chances of Success. That's right, everything you need to know to launch your career as a singer-songwriter, all based on my 40 years in the live performance arena, and believe me, I've seen it all. In my book, you'll find the 10 things you have to deal with before even thinking about becoming a singer-songwriter-performer. You'll also learn about the 5 things every singer-songwriter can do this weekend to make their live show better. 5 things I can guarantee that you are not doing already. Plus, there's tips on songwriting and staging, photo and video shoots, publishing, merch, dozens of other topics, all written for people who don't particularly like to read. And again, it's free. Just go to the Business Side of Music website homepage and look for my book cover. Click on it, and a free digital copy of my book will be yours. I'm Larry Butler, and I approve of this message. Thanks.
You're listening to the Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio, Michael Blanton's here today. We've talked a little bit about getting where you got with Amy Grant and Michael W. Smith and all the things that led up to that, your time at Gaylord Idea Entertainment, all the projects you've worked on. But you have something now that you're developing called Songwriting University. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, this is a project that's been 3 years in the development with Joe Beck and Billy Sprague, who really had the idea of We're in a unique situation in the music business right now where what used to be a staple where publishing companies would sign writers and keep them kind of employed by paying them a monthly draw while they collected all these songs, back when CDs and were really kind of our staple industry, revenue maker. But that's changed. A lot of great former A-listing writers are sitting at home trying to go, okay, how do I get my songs? You know, I can't get a publishing deal, so how do I get my songs cut? Joe Beck really started this thing, brought Billy Sprague into it, I'd formerly worked with Billy as an artist and a writer and had signed him to Reunion years ago. And so they brought me and brought Gary Glover into the picture just to go, can you guys help us turn this into a real business? And so the more I started looking at it, it's going, this is awesome. Not only is it helping discover new writers around the world, it actually is supporting what I think is the goldmine of Nashville, is the songwriters that are really needing some support. And so it's an opportunity for Nashville songwriters or people associated with Nashville that can come online and do a songwriting session with anybody in Tulsa, Los Angeles, Guam, or, you know, Germany that wants to co-write a song. They can go online and write with a Nashville songwriter and actually have a songwriting session, a two-hour session.
Is this genre specific, or can it be anybody from hip hop to country to gospel to jazz?
I would say yes, but obviously we don't have a lot of big hip hop writers in town, but we do have some, and we're just getting started. So what we're calling our faculty, which is our writers that we're into the faculty room, we're still adding to almost weekly, and yes, so it's not genre specific. Now, because we're in Nashville, there's a lot of country connections, but, you know, a lot of the great writers have written great pop, Christian, and country songs throughout the years. So I really want to support that legacy of this town. We really are known for our songwriting, and I really want to support that.
I read it was actually a quote that I'm going to share here that I think kind of speaks how the business has evolved, and it was David Bowie who said this back in 2002. He said, music itself is going to become like running water or electricity. So it's like, just take advantage of these last few years, because none of this is ever going to happen again. You better be prepared for doing a lot of touring, because that's really the only unique situation that's going to be left.
Man, boy, was that prophecy or what?
Boy, exactly.
I mean, he absolutely nailed it. And for those of us who've lived in the industry, who lived through the heyday of, you know, it was all about radio promotion and you sell your CDs and tours. I mean, 95% of the business today is your touring ticket.
And that model changed so dramatically.
Oh, my goodness.
And over a short period of time.
Yes.
How does a songwriter survive? We've had guests on the show that talk about getting your music into film and television and those types of avenues to travel down. But can the songwriter just be a songwriter, or do they need to be more? What is it that they need to look for?
It's really hard to just be a songwriter. I think you've got to be thinking about your other day job until you hit one of those big hits. If you hit a big lick as a co-writer, collaborator, and a big artist, because we all know there's 15% of the artist industry that are still the big boys, that when they put out music, it's either going to stream or it's going to be the big ticket seller. So we're all still trying to get into those buckets with our single song. And then, of course, the sync side is a big, big deal. But what we're finding is, you know, the internet has opened up that a kid sitting in a freshman dorm in Oklahoma can put out an album tomorrow and put out a single and kind of go work it and do his social media and kind of get his own thing. What we're finding is songwriters are exactly like Bowie just said, that it's all about, it's like electricity and water. We take it for granted. And so people are trying to figure out, well, I want to write songs, but how do I get into the network of people that are going to be considered as even listening to my song? Well, we think the Songwriting University is going to be a platform to help discover the new. It's going to honor the guys that have been doing this, that are sitting home going, I don't want to go get a job at Amazon when it opens here. I want to write songs. So it's an opportunity to co-write with people around the world, and they get paid that day, as opposed to, you know, hoping we get a cut somewhere down the road.
And these are all credible songwriters that have got legacy behind them.
That's
got
right.
Hits behind them. We've had Joe Beck on the show, and his credentials are stellar.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, these are all guys, and And Billy and Joe are kind of developing that, and Gary Glover and I are both speaking into it. But the truth is, it's really to honor the guys that have had huge success as writers in the past in all genres. I think this, once this kind of begins to be known that I can go book a session and write with a Joe Beck and work on a song, this could be, I mean, whether you're an older person who's worked for a bank all your life and you're going, you always love music, and gosh, I live out here in Tulsa, I'd love to ride with somebody, I'm sure not going to move to Nashville, well, here's one way to do it. And then, so I think it's going to be fun to see how this kind of organically builds.
Is there a certain criteria that aspiring songwriter needs to get involved with Songwriting University?
No, I mean, we talked about it, how funny it would be that some person call and say, look, I got one word for you. Can we just start here with this one word? And I think the job of our faculty is to get creative and go, okay, let's work on it. Let's try and make that happen. But that's what we're going to have fun doing. Even people that want to memorialize an event of going, you know, we had our family reunion in Pasadena, we'd like to write a song about it just to memorialize our family reunion. We don't know if anything will ever happen to it. Can we write with you? Well, that's what the songwriter is going to be creatively charged with.
But you never know once something
you
gets
never
out
know.
There.
That's right.
We had a guest on the show who talked about, he wrote a song for his wife for their wedding day.
Hmm.
And somebody filmed it when he sang it at the wedding
on
their iPhone, smartphone, and put it out there on YouTube. And he's had millions
of hits,
you know, and it's streaming like crazy. And that's how he has found a success. So you never know.
You never know. And that's where we're trying to keep it as fluid as possible. So it's real creative. You know, you can try one session and decide if you like it or not. You can buy three sessions in a group and kind of work on one song or two songs and at least get something ready and figure out how can I get that produced and get it up on the line. Because we all know there's no magic formula that why that guy got a million and then some artists on, you know, Sony tomorrow can't even get recognized. It's all the fickleness of fans picking what they like.
My wife and I we binge watch NCIS on Netflix, and we'll watch 3, 4, 5 episodes a day because we got like 16 seasons to get through. And I heard a song last night, Patty Griffin, Not Alone.
My gosh.
And I've never heard of this artist until that song last night. And what was so interesting, my point here is I heard a couple lines in the song. Because, you know, the thing is, on a show like that, they don't give you the credit.
That's right.
You have to kind of search for it. And I was able to Bing search, type in, you know, the 2 or 3 lines that I remember. And it popped up. And there she is. And I can listen to the song on YouTube. And that's the amazing thing about the technology that we have today.
Right.
As a songwriter, and what you said is just that one keyword or a certain phrase or a sentence that connects, and that's how you can find things. What is the other component that's involved in Songwriting University? Because you talk about you can do it at long distance.
Yeah.
Do you do it through Skype or is it FaceTime or how's it work?
It's a Skype. It's a visual writing session. I'm not exactly sure. Let's call it Skype for the moment.
Yeah.
The other part, which I thought is what you're about to say, we've actually kicked off a songwriting competition, which we're basically trying to encourage people that do have songs to go, well, I don't know if I want to write with anybody yet, but I have a song. We created an online competition that we're going to declare in April, you know, who the winner will be, and we'll give $10,000 away to the writer.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's a legit writer's thing that we've kind of copied and learned from all the other writing competitions. But we wanted to use that as a stimulus to kind of get people to start looking at Songwriting University it's a place for me to go really work on my craft if I want to do that.
I think songwriting, you know, we say that here in Nashville, especially, it all begins with the song.
Yes.
And everything else after that follows. So I think the aspiring songwriter, whether they have a lot of experience at it or they've never written a song before, but they have that idea, this is a great opportunity for them.
Oh, I think so. I mean, here's a stat that I've heard that please don't ask me where I got it, but I've heard that literally probably certainly 10 years ago, we probably had 4,500 writers in Nashville who were on publishing deals, who actually, you know, made a stipend from their publishing deal. We're down to probably 250 of those writers today. So when you think about how many writers are still here trying to go, how do I get in the door? I can't get that publishing deal.
Yeah.
Then you've got to go, this could be a really, Songwriting U could be a great support for our what Nashville is, truly known for as our songwriters.
And the publishing deals just aren't there anymore, are they?
You can't fund them. You can't really fund them anymore because even CDs used to be, you know, a bonus because you would have, gosh, you would have 15 songs on a CD, and it may be one hit, but the others made just as much money.
Exactly.
So today, now we have, you know, that one song is going to get streamed, but those others are going to be forgotten and not streamed and not make any money. So it's disappointing.
We're going to take a break and get a word in for a couple of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Michael Blanton and find out what else he's getting involved in here in the music business.
Hi, this is Brian Nutter with Nutter Guitars, and you're listening to The Business Side of Music.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Wow, I just joined the Music Starts Here community. This is a truly hidden gem for anyone in the music business. Whether you live in Nashville or anywhere else in the world, Music Starts Here is like a GPS for your music career. This is the place to be if you want to get advice and direction from some seriously talented musical people who have been where you want to go. Music news, events, and a great big community with resources for artists, songwriters, musicians, studio and tech, along with music business advice from pros in the industry, all on one site. Make sure you get your free profile now. Go to www.musicstartshere.org. That's musicstartshere.org.
You're listening to The Business Side of Music.
Back in the studio with Michael Blanton. Talking about all things music business, considering, I think, collectively between you and I, and I say this with nothing but graciousness and gratitude, but between you and I, we'd probably go back about 75 years in this business collectively.
I'm sure I'm 20 of those. You're probably...
Well, 30 of it.
I'm teasing.
We'll just leave it there.
No, you're absolutely correct.
So along with managing such great artists as Amy Grant and then having Songwriting University, what else are you getting involved in these days?
Well, you know, the fun thing for me is I still feel young at heart, and I love the art of development. So what I love about Songwriting University, it's a developing tool for new writers and for older writers. So I love the intersection of that. I still love watching young artists develop. I'm still working with young, new artists that are newbies that aren't going to make any money for a while until they hit either a big hit or happen to be one of the, you know, 3% that get signed to a label that makes something. But also that's kind of connected with the film lane. I'm actually have got a partner, Terry Benedict, who was a producer on Hacksaw Ridge, that's really moving all of his work from L.A. into Tennessee and wanting to do more work here. But to me, that all kind of connects, and the music is such a big, important part of that, as well as just the creative artist development part out of Nashville. I think this is such a key city for developing new innovative ideas, and whether it's content or whether it's a new digital platform like Songwriting U, I think that it all fits in the city. So I'm touching a little bit of all those.
Do you find Nashville to still be open arms, especially when in comparison to, like, say, Los Angeles or New York, which is they keep, from my personal experience in Los Angeles, Hollywood, very close to the vest, not letting those doors open. Do you think it's like it used to be? Has it changed much? Do you think there's still plenty of opportunities out there in this city for that aspiring fill-in-the-blank, whatever it is you're going to be, a producer or an engineer or a songwriter or aspiring artist, you know, developing young talent?
Yeah.
Is this still the market for that? Is Nashville still the market?
I absolutely believe it is. And most of that is due to the songwriter talent, and not just the musician, but people who are really great songwriters. So I'm also working with a company called Vertigo that is a music app that is a new discovery of finding new artists and helping to raise their banner. And so I look from technology to the film to the new talent coming that's absolutely drawn to Nashville. This is going to be a home base for that. And there's going to be great music always in L.A. Austin's going to have great music. Chicago, Minneapolis. I mean, but I think when it comes to the songwriting, the beginning of that content and maybe even that melody, I'm a big preacher that it's called the music business and not the lyric business, because it is still about the music.
Yeah.
Even though songwriters are about great lyrics most of the time, we think it really is about the melody. So I think that is here and is in collaboration. I think people are doing so many great things together, and it happens in this city. Part of the friendliness of this town, welcomes people in. It's not harsh, it's not cold, but it's a bit more dog eat dog world, and it just takes a little longer to break into it. And I think that's where the digital, the Vertigo app, music app, all the way to the songwriting you as a writing platform is going to be real important for the future. It's innovation.
We've had this conversation with other people, so I'd love to get your opinion. Coming into, and I'm going to use Nashville because that's obviously where we're based out of, but having worked in LA too and spent some time working in New York, that you really need to spend some time in this city because it's not going to be an overnight success. You're not going to get those doors open. It really is about the relationships, building the relationships, keeping those relationships, and not burning bridges.
That's right.
When you come to town as an aspiring, as I said, whatever, fill in the blank, you need to not be afraid. You need to be pretty fearless walking in this door and not be afraid to knock on doors and see where you can get yourself.
No question. The problem is a lot of these kids come in thinking they deserve something.
Mm-hmm.
So there's you need to be in my network, and almost a demanding, arrogant kind of piece of it.
That won't get you very far.
And that doesn't get you very far. What happens in this town is people are very astute to going, we really want authentic personalities, people that want to learn. They want to give, but they want to learn. And I think the kids that come in, I've seen a lot of kids come and just get frustrated and go back. You know, they're through. I can't get through the door. I think if we as older guys in the business, and if we can continue to speak to the young millennials and the kids coming in, just to say, you know, there's something about patience. Maturity is a part of learning that life is not just a smooth road. It is really up and down, and you've got to learn in both of those scenarios. And out of that should come great stories, great melodies that you should be able to create. And if you stay with it, if it's really a passion of your heart, it's going to produce something. I've seen people that have stayed with it so long, and they love Nashville, but they never were successful until one day they happened to hit just that one song. I was talking to Mike Reed the other day, who wrote I Can't Make You Love Me for Bonnie Raitt.
Right.
And he was telling the story about writing that song. Well, that song has radically changed his life, but he was a football player, you know, before he played for the NFL. And then he got here and, of course, loved songwriting, learned to play piano growing up. And he really worked on that, just the art of that song. Well, it takes time for really good songs sometimes to be born. That song originally was born as a bluegrass super up special thing. And he was one night was sitting on the piano, got up early one morning, was just tinkering on the piano, and kind of found that melody for I Can't Make You Love Me kind of in the quietness of the morning. And it's like magic happened. He was going
a whole new pace.
I mean, it just changed what he thought that song was going to be. Well, you gotta learn to let art just develop, and you don't force it just because, oh, I got a good idea, I've got to go do it. Sometimes you gotta let, and that's what we've got to train the young kids coming in, and I hope we get to continue to do that by doing. I mean, this kind of a interview, this kind of talking session, really does help people that are listening to go, you know what, there's something to be said about learning. First of all, learn to be patient about everything.
And I don't think we're ever too old to learn.
We're not.
I was listening to what you were saying earlier when you talked about the app.
Right.
When you talk about Vertigo. When you and I started in this business, forget about cell phones or internets. If you had said app to us, we would have said
anything.
Yeah.
Like appetizer?
Yeah, exactly. But the business has changed, and it will continue to change. Yeah. And we either have to learn to transition into it and work with it, or get out of its way, because it's not going to stop.
No, it's not. And I love working with the younger coming on artists and the younger writers. But I find myself, you know, not trying to run to be their manager as much as trying to be their executive producer mentor to say, okay, this is a process. You're going to have to allow time and life stories to take its place in you that for us to really discover what are you going to say as a musician or as an artist? What genre do you need to be in? And really allow that to come to the front. And that just takes a little time.
Still managing?
I certainly have a team. I've worked with a group, Phoenix Stone out of Los Angeles, who started the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. He's a very pop manager, and I'm in sync with him I've got a team of people that do more of the day-to-day management. I'm kind of that executive manager that, honestly, I keep finding these new young kids that I think are really going to be special. But, you know, it's like you can't prove that, and you certainly can't go bank on that today. But
right.
But I still love the process.
Michael, thank you for being on the show.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you. Hope to come back.
The Business Side of Music is the creation of Tom Sabella and Tracy Snow and is produced by Bob Bender. The Business Side of Music is recorded at Music Dog Studios in Los Angeles, California and Nashville, Tennessee. Production sound designed by Keith Stark. Voiceover and promo by Lisa Busan.
Shut up. We know you can play.
All righty then.